Hey guys, and welcome to the Board Game Barbecue Podcast. I am Mike, and I'm hanging out with two friends today helping me run the show. We have Connor. How's it going, bud?
What's up, Mad Mike?
Not much, man. Not much. It's been a while. I feel it's been a little while, so I'm looking forward to having a bit of a chat.
I reckon the last time we chatted was the I was going to say the hottest 100s, but that was yesterday. Our top 10s. And even then, that was one episode.
Yeah, and then we're trying to get in amongst everyone else as well. But someone else I don't think I've spoken to since then properly. Sarah, how you doing?
Hi, I'm good. I'm good. How are you? Yeah, we haven't spoken since Dexterity Game.
Our Dexterity Patreon episode. Yeah. That's right. That was fun, though. That was fun. Really fun. And that made me go buy another game. So I blame you for that, and I don't take responsibility.
Yeah.
I think you talked yourself into it, but whatever. I'll take the blame.
You mentioned it.
Which one was it?
I can't remember what it's called now. It was a Zoc. Dexterity game where you stack stuff and it's a cooperative. One of your friends mentioned it a lot.
Oh, yeah. Minara?
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah.
After the conversation, the next day I was on Facebook and it popped 100%. Up. I'm like, well, I have to go buy it now.
I will take responsibility.
Isn't Minara a car made by Holden?
Isn't it Monaro?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I knew a car fact. That's exciting. Yeah. Next thing you know, I'll be quoting some sports stuff.
Oh, I was gonna say, I'm on with the two people who love sports more than me from the podcast.
Oh yeah. Like, did you see Jeffo last night?
Jeffo.
Kick that goal.
There was no soccer or football played last night. There was tennis on. There was a women's Australian Open final and the doubles.
Australians yeah, she goes by Jeffo. It's not her actual name.
Because you're best mates with her, Jeffo.
I used to love going to the Australian Open. It was so much fun. We used to get like corporate tickets, you know, with this company I worked for. And then I like got into the habit of going. And I only got like a seat if there was no customers available that day. I'd be like, oh, who wants to go? Because, you know, we've got a spare seat. And I'd be like, yeah, me. And then, you know, when I left that company, I was like, I'm really into the Australian Open. I got to go. I go every year. And then I like had to pay for it myself 1 year. And that was the last year I ever went to the Australian Open.
1 year. It's so expensive. It is. I got absolutely rinsed because as a last minute Christmas present, I was like, I'll buy Australian Open tickets for my partner. Well, I didn't go to an official site, did I? Because I was panicking so much. I thought we were going to get these sweet-ass seats. We're up in the nosebleed section. But luckily, we got to see Roger Federer play, who is like the greatest tennis player of all time. So that was worth it.
That is amazing, But, yes. And then everything on the day cost you
$1,000. And it was stinking. Everything there is $1,000. It was incredibly hot. We got a ground pass. So we're and we were just like, oh my God, when's the main court going to open up so we can get in? When's Rod Laver going to open up? We need to get in there. And it was stinking hot.
It's fun though. You should go. Heineken's are $1,000, but you should go.
Canadian clubs are like your house, your mortgage. You've got a mortgage your house again. They have a Canadian club.
Renata keeps threatening to take me to a tennis match one day. Maybe I'll let her one day. We'll see how we go. She always talks about, but it's the atmosphere. And I'm like, so you don't go for the tennis, you go for the atmosphere. Yes. I'm like, why does it have to be at the tennis then? Like, can't we have a cool atmosphere somewhere else?
Go to the darts.
Good old dart atmosphere. No, it's fun going to the tennis. I don't know. There's something about like the 1v1 competition of tennis that's just super exciting.
And it's really strategic too. Like you go, oh, they're just hitting the ball hard. It's like, well, no, there's a lot more to it.
You've got to know each other's game and
you know, and positioning once you hit the ball, like where your position and where the opponent's position, all that type. So it is very it's quite board gamey, really. Like, but it's not a board game, which we're here to talk about, of course.
Right.
A while ago, when I was looking at new exercise regimes, I was like, oh, they just need to make like a board game with like heavy pieces and like a big area that you run around. And I'm like, oh, I'm explaining sport. I'm literally explaining sport right here. So I shut that down real quick.
CrossFit.
Like, oh, I got to stop.
CrossFit. Nope. Just carrying giant meeples or cubes. Physically rolling the dice. I was like, six. Yeah, I rolled a six.
I could be behind that. But Enough of sports. Let's talk about the real stuff. Let's talk about the real stuff. Right. Connor, I feel like it's been longer since I've had a chat with you, mate. What you been playing?
What have I been playing? Well, do you want me to actually talk about the board games I've been playing or the video games I've been playing? All right, I'll talk about board games. I've got one for you. So this is a game that I was dying to play for ages and ages and ages. And because someone explained it to me as this, you're probably going to be like, but it's already multiplayer. But multiplayer Gunshot Clever. And yes, Gunshot Clever already is multiplayer, but this is called Millifiori, where you're playing on a board, and it's super combo-tastic. It's so combo-tastic. And it's also got card drafting, but I guess the main difference between this and Gunshot Clever, aside from it's not a roll and write, it's a board game, is that you can interfere with what the other players are doing. So there's five different sections, correct me if I'm wrong, people who are listening, five different sections where you can place your cool little glass diamonds. And depending on how you position them and where you place them will get you different points, and different sections score in different ways. So there's one area where you collect ingredients. The theme here is like totally painted on, like it's got nothing to do with anything. Have you played this, Mike?
I have.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun playing.
It's super fun. So jump in anytime you want. But
I can't remember it. But yeah. I remember I enjoyed it. And I remember the beautiful glass pieces. Yeah.
So there's four main sections and then the docks. But the four main sections are sort of like a spatial puzzle. So one is where you collect ingredients and you get a score based on how many of your glass pieces are touching one another without a break. The next one is you get a score based on how many of your pieces are in a row without a break and what value those pieces are on. So, for example, if I place one down and it's connected to another one, I would get my previous score and that number that it's on as well. But of course, then if Sarah wants to go on there, she can break that. And then obviously, you know, she's broken it and then I can only get the previous one. There's another section where you start building pyramids, and on the bottom, and you can actually, you can use any card you want to place there, and then you build up, and then you've got the bottom row that's worth 1 or 2 points, then the second row is worth 3 or 6 points, and then the top row is worth 5 or 10 points. And in each of these sections, you can also have a bonus action to place down another one. So it really does feel like that combo, you know, I do this and that lets me do this and that lets me do this. The only one that sort of directly feeds into another one is the goods and then the docks, because depending on how many goods are in a particular row, you'll get points for a bunch of ships taking off. But like I said, it could be, the theme could be anything, but it's like glass making or glass blowing, and then it's set in the town of Millifiori. Is that, did I pronounce that right? Do you know if I pronounced that right? Probably not.
Give it a bit more of a Millifiori.
Well, I didn't know. It's one of those. Is it Italian or is it French? That's why I was like, I don't know. Like, if,
I was about to say, do they even say Mille or is it like...
Yeah, it's like
me. Yeah, no, it would be Mille. I think it would be. Yeah. If it's European, they do say the L.
Not,
right?
It's not so. Like a J. Yeah. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think you're right. If that
Mille. Fiore. But this is one of kids. Just sound like you know how to say it, and then it's fine.
That's why Def needs to say these games, because he has that natural accent,
right? And he says it with confidence, and we're all like, "Yeah, that's it."
Right. With our ochre accents. But this is really cool. If you're looking for a game that it's super easy, like we sat down and we learnt it and played it in just over an hour. So that was me, my sister, and my brother, and. The only thing it might suffer from is like a carry, like I, as people got steamrolled, but there was, my sister was a tearaway leader. However, my brother caught up at the end because of victory points, like end of game scoring. But there are, obviously you can interfere with other people. So it's that rub of, do I interfere with someone or do I play my own game? And you've got to make that choice as well. And then you throw in the card drafting. So it's about, well, I actually need to take this because I don't want the person next to me to get it. And then use that to score even more on their next turn. So yeah, it's really, really good, Mike. What, you said you enjoyed it. What else did you?
Yeah, I'm looking up photos of it because I'm trying to refresh my memory because it's been a while. But I think I remember this feeling of, oh, I really want to work hard on this section, but then everyone else working on the other sections made me have to pull away from my console because it's one of those things that if you let someone work too much in one area, they get way too powerful real quick. So as much as you want to work down here on the left and get this sort of engine going, you have to make sure you're making an appearance in other sections, otherwise you let people get away with it.
Yeah.
So it has like multipliers, really enjoying crazy multipliers.
What's that, Sarah?
Sorry,
I was just going to say, does it have like crazy multipliers?
Yeah, like so for example, in that one that I was talking about, if you just let someone go forever, they will score like so many points, because then there's bonus points based on whether or not you can get each of these maybe different numbers on a door, or it could be different symbols that you need to place down, or it could be different locations that you place the glass in. And so if you let someone do that, they're just going to absolutely smash it. But it's great. I'm teaching this at the game day, actually, so it's down for me to teach. Cool. So, yeah, hopefully a few people can play it and enjoy it. I think, like I said, it's really, really easy to teach. I think it's one of those games that you think you're doing an awesome job, and then because like what Mike said, if you let someone go and just keep going down one path, they'll probably smoke you. So, yeah, no, definitely keen to play this a few more times, not just at the game day, but, yeah, it's Millefiori.
Millefiori.
I just said it way louder than I would normally talk. So.
Your hands need to move as you say it, I feel like.
Well, Sarah thinks I talk too much with my hands, so I'm holding them beneath the desk.
You think I talk too much with my hands?
No, you told me I talk too much with my hands.
We just need to chop our hands off. It's the only solution. Yeah.
What have you been playing, Sarah?
I mean, I've already talked about these games, but I've been playing a lot of Frosthaven. Oh, I think I'm about
talk more about this game.
Oh, I think I'm like 12 scenarios in now already. So good. My character is like almost retired already. It's crazy.
So
I feel like the journal, you know, the journal things you do in this one seem like a little bit easier.
Okay. I was going to ask that.
In Gloomhaven, I couldn't retire like a single character. I was like, I don't know what this scenario quest line is. I have not found it and I might never find it. And yeah, it turns out I never found it. But in Frosthaven, I'm like almost, I think I'm 2/3 of the way through it, because I've got one of those quests that's like you need to defeat all these enemies, and there's only one enemy on there that I haven't defeated yet.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. I'm loving it. I love the character. She's kind of challenging to play as, but she's like super thematic because she – so I think I talked about this. She's the Deathwalker, so she like stabs people from the shadows. You got to set shadows up and then you got to put them strategically near them. Cool. And the monsters, so you can just attack from all the shadows at once. So cool. Really loving it. We built a boat. That's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting.
It's very exciting. And now we have boat events. So if we go to do a scenario on the water, instead of road events, now we have boat events.
Whoa.
So
that's cool.
Yeah. Which makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Because like, well, you're not on the road. This is a different thing, right?
Do the events have a different feel to them? Like, are they distinguishable because from road events?
They're mostly about the weather, right? Because when you're on a boat, it's all about the what's the weather doing, you know? And we had like this one where we're like, we're going to this scenario and it was like, no, the weather's bad, you know, nothing's happening. There's no wind, so not today. And we're like, oh. Like, we had to go back. We had to do something else. We just couldn't do it. We're like, oh, that's disappointing. But I guess it made thematic sense. So that was a bit sad. But, yeah, but other than that, it's been pretty cool. Like we found a message in a bottle on the water and then we were like, oh, what do we do? And it like gave us different options what to do. Like did we want to write back? Do we want to – like it cheered us up because we were having like a boring day on sea, you know, out on the sea.
In the doldrums.
And we were – in the doldrums, was so bored. And then we got this message in the bottle and it cheered us up. And then it was like, do you want to write back and maybe cheer up somebody else? And all this, it's really cute. I love it. It's so good. Honestly, it's just, it's brought back the excitement of Gloomhaven for me, you know? Mm-hmm. It really has. And because I'm playing with somebody who is super into it too, like, it's just so exciting. It's like, what's going to happen next? Yeah, what's going to happen next?
You need to have, and this, I think my copy's coming this week. I think that's, so that'd be cool.
Okay.
Awesome. Which is terrible timing. And I'll talk about that later, why it's terrible timing. Like knowing what I know about Gloomhaven and have played Gloomhaven and Jaws of the Lion, it does get to a point where if you don't have those people that are like, yeah, let's play again, you're like, well, what am I supposed to do? Like, I'm stuck with these characters and I don't really want to play it solo. Like, I know I like playing games solo, but both of them, I want to share that experience with other people. Yeah. I don't just want to take over and play by myself. I do that with enough games as it is.
It's much more fun with someone else.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to find a group to play this with who are going to commit, you know, kind of like, you know, Adrian does with Kingdom Death Monster and say once a month, twice a month, we're going to play this. We're going to get together and play it, outside of like weekly game nights and things like that. But yeah, oh man, I listened to you talk about it on the other episode, Sarah, and I was like, I can't wait. I just can't wait to open the box up, have a look at all the toys, find all the cool things you've got to do. It just sounds really cool.
I wasn't excited about it because I was like, oh, I kind of, you know, I my excitement with Gloomhaven dropped off a little bit ages ago because, you know, the person I was playing with lost interest basically. And so then exactly like you said, it's hard to just maintain that. Like it's a huge campaign and to maintain that solo is pretty intense. So I kind of wasn't that excited about it. And I was thinking, oh, maybe when, you know, like if Mo comes, maybe he'll play it with me kind of thing. But then I just thought, I'll try it. You know, I'll see if Kerry wants to play it. And she did. And she has just gotten so into it that's made me super excited by it. Actually, Nelly in the community, she asked a good question about it in our Discord, which was, is it okay with two players? Because Gloomhaven was kind of a little bit funky with two players sometimes. And because we're playing it two, and I think it does work with two, I think they've balanced it a little bit better than Gloomhaven. Gloomhaven had some scenarios that seemed impossible with two.
Yeah.
But I think it does come down to, you've got to really strategize so that, like, each scenario will have a specific thing. Like the last scenario Kerry and I did, I took cards that didn't have a lot of movement and it was one of those escape scenarios. So obviously I needed a lot of movement. I needed to move fast. And we had to attack some bears and stuff. And so we had to have like hard hitting but also fast movement. Mm-hmm. So hit them fast, then run. And the first time we did that, I didn't have those cards with me. So that was just a nightmare with two. There was no, you know, kind of way around that. So that was a fail. So I think sometimes it's just the strategy of the scenario. But I do think that it's absolutely a possibility to play Frosthaven with two. Just make sure you have a mix of characters. Like don't just have two spellcasters because they're a little bit more difficult to set up.
And
they're soft and they have not glass many wounds.
But I think that's, you know, I can't remember. Are you allowed to open them up and have a look at their powers and stuff like that? Like, is that
the starting characters? Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can say, all right. And that might be a bit harder if you don't have experience in those types of games. Like, I was reading a post somewhere, it might have been on Reddit, and these people played Gloomhaven as like their first board game. Like, they had never played a board game before. They went on to BGG. They saw it was their number one board game. Oh, well, if this is the number one board game, we didn't play BGG, it. But then they said, we loved it. We couldn't believe it. But they were big fans of fantasy writing. So they kind of understood, lore behind, okay, we know that spellcasters are not big brutes. They're not going to go through and take all the hits. We're going to hang at the back. We need to have someone else that can, you know, it sort of get a bit rough and tumble and things like that. Yeah.
So I'd say that have someone who, like, if one character, just look at like polar opposites. Have one character that's got a lot of hit points. If you've got one that doesn't have many, right? If you've got one that's doing spellcasty weird stuff, have one that's just doing basic attacks, just so that you can. You've got at least one character that can do something while you're prepping your spells or whatever it is you're doing. And I think with us it's worked really well because we've got like the Drifter who gets just kind of a jack of all trades, but mostly just like brute forcing everything, just melee attacking everything. And then I've got my crazy shadow thing. So that works so well. Those two characters, Deathwalker and Drifter, work really well together. So
has Frosthaven made it easier to like set up and pack up than Gloomhaven, or is it pretty much the same sort of thing?
A little bit. It's a little bit better, but it's still got the issue where, you know, there's so many monsters, standees and all that stuff. And they've tried. And then the rooms are the worst because the rooms just sit on top any which way. But Kerry actually put them in number order.
That's nice.
And so, the last time we played, they were in number order and she's like, oh, we need a, you know, a 5 and a 7 and an 11. And I'm like, oh, my God, Kerry. this is easy. I know where everything is. This is amazing. It was like a game changer. So do that.
Yeah.
Do that. Number order.
Cool. Very nice.
And I put all the monster cards in alphabetical order. Oh, it's like very organized now.
That is very organized.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd be too excited to
just dump the box over and sort it out later.
Well, you just like, I just start reading the character cards and work out what I'm going to do and be able to do.
Yeah.
What about you, Mike? What have you been playing?
I feel like I've taken a bit of a step back in time because I've been playing a couple of games. Well, one new version and an old version. So I've been playing a bit of Clank Catacombs recently. I'm teaching at the game day, so I wanted to rip it out and get back into it and just make sure I know how to teach it properly and effectively. And it's been really fun. Like, I don't know. I've been staring at my old Clank sitting on the shelf, and I think I'm going to sell it because I don't think I can go back.
That's blasphemy, like, my friend. That is blasphemy.
After having these tiles and the whole thing being a lot more randomized, I think it's what Clank's been missing the whole time, but I'm really, really enjoying it. I've been enjoying that you don't know where the artifact's going to be coming out. You don't know, you know, where everything is, and the board is just growing as you play. It's been really, really fun. So I've had a few games of that, and that's been some deck-building goodness that I've been really, really enjoying.
With the randomness, not randomless, it sounds more like a roguelike type game. So that's in video games where it's randomly generated and you're still in the same kind of rooms, but it's different every time. So, and there might be a different monster or a different thing like that. So is that the kind of vibe it gives off?
Yeah, like especially like searching for treasures is a lot different than this one, because in your old Clanks, you remember that you might have your minor or major secrets placed in certain parts of the board. Once they're taken, bad luck, they're gone now. Whereas now they're in piles next to the table. If you find a minor secret, you just draw one from the pile. If you leave and come back on another turn, you can pull another one again.
Yeah, cool. That's it.
It's no like, well, I missed out now. Well, no, because if you go over that section again, you can still pick something up. But I like they've introduced these lock picks, which keep the game interesting as well. So lock picks you can get through different corridors that are locked, but you're opening up for other people as well. Or you can find major secrets, you can find secret tombs, and you can release prisoners with these lockpicks as well. So these lockpicks become a really important resource because you need them to get around, but you also want to get really good loot with them. And I ran out halfway through a game and it really sort of stuffed me a bit because I was a lot more limited in what I could do, whereas someone else had a good sort of little thing going where they could generate more of them. It's brought back the love. I've always loved Clank, but I don't think I can go back now and play it normal style anymore. Like, I may have to give it a go and see if maybe the expansions keep that fire going. But Clank Catacombs has been really, really fun. I think the market deck is huge. So every time I've been playing, I've been seeing different cards come out. In the last game I played, everyone got KO'd before no one left the dungeon. One person died in the underground section. Everyone else died where you actually could score. But it was a really intense game where towards the start the dragon kept attacking. So you know, we were like, you know, not many turns in, have barely built our decks, and some people already had half their health points taken away. Yeah. So it gave this really big uneasiness going into the dungeon further and further, because you're like, well, am I going to be able to get back? And not many people did, so kept it interesting.
I'm so bad at these games because I'm such a coward. Like, Sarah, did you play Escape Plan with us at one time on with Death?
No, I didn't play it with you.
No, at the time. And I can't remember who played it listening. But I was the first one to get out because I was like, I've got to get out. The FOMO, the worry that I would be like the last stress guy in. I was like, I got to leave. Like, I got to get out of here. So that's I like the idea of Clank, but the fact that you can play the entire game and not score anything at the end is. It causes me great anxiety.
Yeah. It made me feel really bad because one of my friends who I was teaching died just missing out on getting back. And as a teacher, I started getting really guilty. I'm like, well, have I ruined this person's experience? Yeah. And they took it the right way. They said, no, I still enjoyed myself.
Yeah.
And I think that's something I've got to be mindful of going into it. If you're going to teach somebody a game that has player elimination, or has a really big luck element, I think I usually try to, but in Clank, I think I need to maybe warn that a bit harder at the start of the game. Like, hey, this is really random. We're pulling little cubes out the bag. You could have five of them, but they could be the first five we pull out. you know, like, and there is that big chance of not scoring anything. So you want to make sure that you're in for the ride. You want to make sure that you're in there just for a good time, because if you're in there to win, it might be out of your hands. You might have some really bad pulls of your cards and not get movement or not be able to get through tunnels and might not get back. But I personally really enjoy that rush of the game. I really enjoy it just being on edge.
I have a question. So in Clank Catacombs, is there – I thought I saw player boards that have like actual tracks so you can see what your attack power is and how much you walk and something.
No,
like, is
it different? In Clank, your cards have those symbols on them. That's why I always called it Dominion with Purpose, because your
but
cards
I'm like
have...
actually literally looking at Clank Catacombs pictures and that's what it has, and I'm so confused as
to what
that means.
I
want to
see what picture you're looking at now. Maybe send me the picture and let's talk about it. But so on Clank, your cards have movement, your cards have attacks and things like that. So you'll sort of play the cards and you'll have like a virtual little collection of attack points, movement points, and you sort of just spend those as you play the game.
For each turn, it's like it's effectively like a form of currency.
I'm always
reminded of, well, Dominion that said, but Marvel Legendary was probably like the first game that I did it where you had power, which was used to take out the villains, and points, which are used to recruit heroes. But it was pretty much the same thing where you went, it was just a form of currency with just a theme on it. I know Clank's different because you've got the adventuring and things like that, but that's kind of how I saw it. What you're looking
at there, Sarah, is geniuses at work. So that's people that I think have made their own little because in Clank, you play all your cards and you have to use all your cards. I've got 4 movement points, I've got 6 attack, and I've got 3 buying power. I'm going to use 1 movement here, 2 attack. Oh crap! How much movement do I have? So these people have made something that I've wanted to make before, which is they made a little chart that you can just track what you've generated, and you can spend it slowly. I hope that's not something that you can buy, because I want to buy it if you can. They look amazing.
It looks so official.
They look legit.
They fooled me.
I tell you what game does that really well is It's a Wonderful World, because you actually get the currency. You get the little tokens for each time you play a card, rather than it being like, oh, I've got to remember, I've got to count up, and you spend them or whatever. Like that's the other thing I felt with some deck building games is like what Mike said. You go, oh, actually, I'm going to go back to the start and do it again to make sure I've got enough points. Whereas with that system that in the picture with the with the tracks, you can be like, okay, I've got this many points, this many movement points, this many attack points, and then you can just go and spend them as you want. But I guess when you're not carrying them over turn for turn, it doesn't matter at the end, because you just wipe and say, I've got 0 points.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But no, it's been really fun. It's very much enjoying it and looking forward to digging into it a little bit deeper. I would be worried to mention this if Adrian or Jules were on, but I saw a game in your list there, Connor, that you wanted to mention, and I'm interested to see if you actually finally played it.
Is that the Kingdom Death?
It is.
Yeah, I did. We played 2 scenarios. Now, I won't besmirch Jules and Adrian too much, because both of them have assisted me and Garth. What did Adrian call him? Grant and Mark from the Dice Men. So we've been playing Kingdom Death Monster with the Dice Men, and Adrian actually jumped in with the Dice Men and myself the last time, but Jules played the first. It's great. Like, I can really see why people totally dig this game. And as someone who's played heaps of RPGs as a video gamer and a whole bunch of different tabletop RPGs and things like that, it's pretty cool. Like, there was a point there where Jules was getting some armor sets, and he's like, well, if I put this piece next to this piece, I get a bonus. And I was like, wait a moment. You're telling me that you can get bonuses based on like your tableau of armors and where you set them up? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, oh my God, this game is nuts. And like, it's got all this craziness about it that you would have heard, like, you know, lopping off, you know, lines, genitals, and yes. All that stuff. But the good that thing
seems
about
to be
this
the
game,
highlight of the whole game.
But that's what people remember. But there's actually really, really great gameplay behind it too.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I found, because I was like, yeah, I'll give it a go. I was like, you know, like if I enjoy it, I'm happy to give up a couple of hours on a Tuesday or whatever to play with some cool people. Yeah, I'm like, oh man, and it's one of those games, kind of like we were talking about with Frosthaven, Sarah. I'm not as far into Kingdom Death Monster as you would be with Frosthaven, but I was like, I just want to see all that this game has now, like as much as I can, the different monsters, and then when you fight monsters again, I'm probably going to rehash over stuff that Jules and Adrian have talked about, but when you fight monsters again, you become more expert, but then they get more cranky, so they deal different damage, but then you get better stuff. And as someone who, like I said, you know, played lots of Monster Hunter, that's like, it's like the Monster Hunter board game without being Monster Hunter. It's so good. It's so, so good. So, yeah, look, I won't rabbit on about it too much, because I think Jules and Adrian, one, can have played it more, and two, have talked about it enough for everyone. But so good, so, so good. I mean, like, what, when you guys heard about it, what did you think when they talked about it?
Oh yeah,
I played it a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you? Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, so I liked it. I couldn't keep going the campaign, but I thought it was a very interesting, very clever game.
So how far, like I said, I've done like two or three scenarios. Would you have been similar, Mike, or would you have been further? Yeah,
I think I did three from memory, and I was very excited when I got to pick up certain cards with certain body parts of animals on there. I thought it was pretty hilarious. And look, I can definitely see the potential. I can definitely see the big world building, and I thought it was very, very clever. It is a game I could see myself playing more. I just think it's a game I have to play very regularly and for a lot more time to get the most out of it. You know, playing it once every 3 or 4 weeks, especially when I get quite busy enough to sometimes put it off. I think it just doesn't give that exact experience that I'd want for that kind of game. I think you have to give that game a lot of respect and a lot of time to get the most out of it.
And I think that, in a way, because of what you said, I actually don't want to buy it. I would rather be like, no, there's no pressure on me to play it online with people. I don't have to be like, you know, sometimes you get a game. Well, Gloomhaven's probably like this, really. I know we keep bringing it up, but it's like, I have to play this. Like, I've bought this, you know, really expensive game. I want to get the most out of it. I have to keep playing it to get more out of it. Whereas I'm just playing it online, like with a couple of, like I said, really cool people, Jules aside. No, just kidding, Jules. It's just lots of fun, and you know, we're making those stupid jokes about the animal parts that Mike was talking about, and you know, talking about what was it called, like tooth and clawing certain parts of the anatomy. Like, yeah, it was really, really fun, and you know, it's just and it doesn't actually take itself that seriously, weirdly. Like, it's this weird combination of...
It is.
Like, yeah, it's this weird combo, it looks like, of this, like, really dark, grim, bleak scenario where you've got basically nothing and there's no hope of survival, and yet there's, like, this kind of humor in it.
It is. And it's, like, it's kind funny. Of cool. And it's like, very human. And, you know, but stuff like... you know, the tribe needs to grow, so you got to have babies. So, you know, if you have a bed, there's a better chance that the baby's made. Like, this is how, like, I don't know, like,
yeah.
But yeah, it's. I'll just say, it is very, very clever. It's incredibly clever, so well thought out. And I would imagine, you know, it's the type of game where you wouldn't ever have to release a Kingdom Death Monster 2. You just keep releasing content and content and content. Even if it's like bigger box expansions, because the people who have it would just buy everything.
I kind of remember like what happened with the random events, but I remember MJ running into some, I don't know, I'm sure Adrian's already talked about it, but I kind of like the humor in those random events too, whereas you roll a one or two.
I got decapitated.
Things that are going to happen.
I got decapitated.
Oh, did you?
Yep.
You got decapitated.
I got decapitated. Oh, no. So when you, if you take too much damage on a certain body part, you have to then consult a chart. So you roll the dice, consult the chart. Low is bad.
Right.
So like,
of course.
But sometimes you can get like a scar, and then the scar kind of makes you inspire other people. It's like, oh yeah, Sarah, she survived because she's got a scar, or she's missing an eye. Yeah. You're blind, like, but heroic. You inspire leadership because it's like, well, look at this. I don't have an eye, but I can still fight. It's like, whoa. And then you can, and madness is like, you go, oh, I'm going mad. It's like, yeah, but you want madness because you can only fight these things if you're on the brink of insanity. Like, it's
right.
Like,
otherwise, you'd be scared. That's really cool. Yeah.
And super thematic. Like, it is very, very thematic. And I love my thematic.
I feel like it's the Dark Souls of board games.
And combat wise, it's very similar. Like, learning attack patterns, you know, spatial recognition, planning your moves out, and you go, and the desperation. Like, you know, you've played lots of Dark Souls, Sarah. It's like, I have to do everything to beat this boss. I don't care if I survive with one health point. I just need to beat this boss, and sometimes you do. And I've never cheered so much for, like, critical dice rolls. I was like, and, like, all our mics cut out because we were yelling too much. Like, it hit the noise, like, threshold. Great game. Like I said, I feel like I've said it a couple of times, but when Sarah talked about, I think you even mentioned how, I think it was you, Sarah, that mentioned how Isaac has taken inspiration for the settlements for Frosthaven from Kingdom Death Monster.
I think so.
Yeah, the crafting. Like, that if he's done that, that's a really good move.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably not as in-depth. I'm not sure. You're not – like, you're finding loot. You're not exactly taking stuff from the bosses. It's not like you're fighting a boss and they have these – you know, specific sets that you can make after the boss. Yep. Like, that's probably a little bit more in depth. But it is cool that it has crafting and that, like, the whole settlement thing where you've got to defend it. And
it does draw you in a lot more. You do feel like, oh, I've got this thing now. What can I make? Can I build a new smithery so I can turn it into this now?
And 100%. And then we can use those buildings. You know, we can actually go there and we can utilize them. Whereas, you know, in Gloomhaven, it was just like, the town is like this and it has.
Yeah. And it's got a normal growth. Like, you can go and do a couple of quests.
Prosperity, and that's it.
But it's like, you know, each time you get to a level, you're going to be doing this. Whereas you could play Kingdom Death Monster 10 times and level it up. Effectively 10 different ways if you wanted to.
Yeah.
So, you're really looking forward to our next gameplay. Unfortunately, for me, it might be a little while. Maybe, or might do it next week, depends. But after that, I'd have to take a break from gaming. But I won't explain why just yet. I'm going to leave that till the end when we do our oaths, I think.
Ah, yes. No, that's fair. And Sarah, I can see you've been playing some other classics lately.
Yeah, I've just decided to change my sizzle. I have never sizzled my favorite game of all time.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, you know what? I think it's time that I did that.
Talk about it.
Okay, so I taught Harry Mage Knight.
I saw that. I did.
Yeah. I taught it to Harry, and it was a really interesting experience too, because going in, I was like, Mage Knight is like an absolute bear to teach, and like, it took me so long to learn it. And the game comes with, like, two rule books. It comes with, like, a try. It comes with, like, this is the real rules. Yep. And it comes with another thing that's like, here's just a few things that you can just learn now and then you can play.
Read first. Remember how every game came with, like, a read this first? Like, I remember all Fantasy Flight games came with that. It's like, here's the omnibus of keywords, but this is, like, the how to play.
Yeah. Just go to this one. Like, Arkham's like that, right? And then it has that glossary that's like 80 pages. Yeah, so I just decided, I was like, all right, Harry, so you want to play this in a pub, which is insane, right? Playing Mage Knight in a pub is just, you know, it's not the best idea. But sure, we did it anyway, and we survived. Yeah, so I said, look, we're just going to play it. I will teach you, like, some game concepts, and then we're just going to play it. And we also played with Dean. So it was a three-player game, which was awesome. Dean pretty much remembered it, even though it'd been ages since he played it. He pretty much remembered it except for a few curly things. And by the way, a few curly things, like, no one knows every rule in Mage Knight. Even when I played with Mo's played it like 1,000 times as well. He was looking up stuff. And we were like, hey, is it this way or is it this way? You know, that's just the way it is.
Hang on, it's too complex for that. Don't say that. Because Def listens to this podcast.
Right.
He would know every rule.
He would probably, he probably would. That's true, actually. I take it all back.
Anyway, sorry to distract you.
Yeah, so we played the like Blitz Conquest, which is the shortest one, and it took us from like 6 to midnight. We left at midnight. So 5 hours it took. But I just, yeah, I basically just said the game concepts. I'm like, look, it's kind of a deck builder and it's kind of an RPG, and you're going to level up a few times. You're going to get more cards. You're going to use your influence to learn new skills. So you're going to get even like more cards even though you're not leveling up. You need to move, like this is movement, this is how that works, because movement cost is like all based on what terrain it is, and then it's okay. Based on whether it's day or nighttime, because if it's nighttime in the desert it's not so bad and you can go further. If it's daytime in the desert it's really hard to move, you know. So there's a lot of fiddly stuff. Then I'm like, okay, combat is really tough. If you've got ranged you can hit them first, if you don't they hit you first. You have to block, then you can attack them, or you don't have to block, you can take wounds. Took through the combat, and then I was like, you know what? That's it. That's probably enough. I've told you how to move, fight. Let's just get straight in. And yeah, we basically just played it turn by turn. Harry kind of – like we all played open-handed. It's co-op, right? That scenario is co-op anyway. You don't have to play co-op. There are – I don't think I've ever played competitive Mage Knight. It's much more fun to co-op. It's hard enough co-op, you know? Yeah. Like it's hard enough as it is. Why make it harder and do PvP? And Harry was really enjoying it. He was really enjoying the challenge. I think, you know, anyone that's played like something like Gloomhaven or Spirit Island or Scrap, Penny's game, you know, there's a lot of that sort of similar hand management kind of, here's what the card can do, but you can power it up and do something else that's a little bit crazy. In Mage Knight, you can only power up one card per turn generally. So you have these like mana dice that are available to you that you can use to power up one card. But if you've like prepared and you've gone to like crystal mines and things like that, you can actually get this crystallized magic that you can store. And so you can potentially store them up to power up a lot of cards in one turn. So there's that. You're rolling around the countryside. You're like attacking keeps, attacking mage towers, attacking cities. You're going in, delving into dungeons and seeing what's there. Anyway, it was great. We're having a really good time. Harry was a little bit behind me and Dean. Dean was just killing everything. Like he was on fire and he was leveling up. I was a little bit behind him, but sort of staying roughly the same level, because you want to be kind of roughly the same level, right? Because we all have to attack 3 cities by the time round 4 comes along to win, right? We've got to take down 3 cities.
As in, so when you, like you 3 at the same time, have to defeat a city together.
You can assault a city together, but basically the scenario says it doesn't matter how we do it, whether we do it together or separate, but 3 cities have to go down. We have to fight the monsters there. And like the first city is at level 5, which means there's like 3 bad guys and they're pretty tough.
Yeah,
then the
yeah,
next right. city is like level 8 and there's like 3 baddies, but they're like crazy tough. And then the third city is like there are 4 bad guys and they're pretty damn tough.
So you do need, you need all 3 of you to get in there and kick some backside. Needle, yeah.
Right. And we all need to be pretty powerful. So we need a combination of leveling up to get new abilities and stuff, and we also need to influence. So we need to take over mage towers to get spells. We need to go to monasteries to learn new skills and get cards that way. And we were struggling a little bit. And we were trying to keep Harry, you know, in line with us. But, of course, like he was new to it and stuff like that. He was just having bad luck. He kept getting a lot of hands that were just all movement or they were all attack.
Yeah,
he couldn't get a combination of both. So it was either like he was moving a lot or he was attacking a lot, but he couldn't get the attack when he needed it. And then he just did this random thing where he was like, I'm going to go into that ancient tomb. And
no, don't do it. Don't do it.
Right.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a good idea.
Said, don't do it. It was a bad idea. There was a dragon in there and he was like level 3. And I'm like, dude, you are level 3 and you cannot attack that dragon. And there's also another bad guy there. And even that bad guy is probably too high level for you. And if he doesn't kill you... The dragon will definitely kill you.
And at that point, can you like run away from these bad guys? Or you're like, let's just pretend that didn't happen.
No, you can't. So I guess the bad guys shoot first in Mage Knight.
Of course.
So you are going to take wounds. So yeah, he took, I think he took like a hand of 12 wounds or something ridiculous. And he came up against a Medusa that paralyzed him, which meant he literally could do nothing after getting attacked by a Medusa. Couldn't do a thing because he was just paralyzed. He just took a whole bunch of wounds. And I'm like, well, what did we learn today?
Yes. You didn't have to get like saving. Mage
Knight sucks.
Mage Knight sucks. Harry hates it. No, he actually really liked it. It was good. We took down, I think we took down one city. Yeah, we got through one of the cities, one out of three, which isn't too bad, I think, as a first play. We had a couple of weird things happening with the map. Like we only had one mage tower and it was hard. It was right at the start. It was hard to get back to. So we didn't have spells, and we're mage knights. Mm. We need spells.
You're not
spells
just are knights. The most
powerful thing. You're mage we're not just knights. Knights, right? And they're the most powerful thing in the game. And because we didn't have, you know, the opportunity to really buy them, we were kind of on the back foot there. Although Harry did get this awesome advanced skill that let him use spells that were in the offer, like they were in the spell offer, not even in his hand, and he could fire off these spells that were just there in the market. So that was kind of cool. So he at least got to cast a spell, yeah, but like none
you,
of us got
you
to.
You kind of want just that one cool moment. Like I know when I play Arkham, you're kind of like, oh, I think we're going to tank this scenario. Not tank it, but I think we're going to lose it. But maybe I can do something cool. Like let me do something. Yeah. Let me like go down the blaze of glory or sneak past and get these clues and get this item. Just let me do that. Let me pivot a little bit and do something awesome. So it's, I'm glad he got that. I did speak to him afterwards and he was like, that game is hard as. Yeah, that's such a hard game, which is kind of interesting, right? Like we refer to games as like heavy or deep or, you know, complex. We don't necessarily talk about games as being hard. So it was just interesting for him to say that because, it should be hard. It's a co-op game. You want it to be hard because you don't just want to be like, oh, I steamrolled that. I win. That's me done now.
Yeah.
But it is very mathy and it is very puzzly. And so I think it does seem like it is legit hard. It's like, how can I math it out? How can I make this hand that I have here? Because there's multiple ways to use your hand. So it's like, can I do it? And I know – like, it was really sweet because Harry was like, I know I'm dead from this. I know I can't kill this dragon and this Medusa, but there must be a way to do something better than I'm doing, right? And I think that turn took like half an hour and we were all invested. Like, Dean was looking at it. I was looking at it. I was like, what can you do? And then finally in the end, we were like, hang on. If you do all of this, you can kill the Medusa. So just do that. You won't get paralyzed and then the dragon will – sure, the dragon's going to knock you out, but I don't think there's any way around that. And so you can sort of puzzle it out and it is really hard. Like it is legit hard, but it's – like you said, in a co-op, you want it to be like that. And it makes it so – it like feels so good when you actually kill an enemy in that game. You're like, wow, you know, that was really challenging and I did it. I pulled it off and – you know, I took over the keep or whatever and now the keep is mine and you get to put your little shield tokens from your character. So it's like, this is my banner, you know, on the keep and I own this now. And every time you do actually achieve something in the game, it does make the game slightly easier. The game levels itself a bit because the cities get harder. Like the cities are crazy hard. But the fact that like you take over a keep and now one, you've leveled up, so you probably get more skill, you know, got more skills, you got more cards and stuff, but also you get like your hand limit increases because you've got a keep now. You can hire new units. Like you can actually hire armies and stuff like that in that game as well.
This game just sounds so cool. Every time you talk about it, I just makes me hover over a buy button a bit longer. And I'm like, I think just I hear how hard it is to learn as well. So I think that's the one thing that keeps scaring me away from it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to pull the trigger one day. It's going to happen.
Just have someone lined up to teach you
or I'm looking
to
at them.
Play it with you.
No, yeah. Mitch will teach you.
I'll do it. I'll do it. I'll do it on TTS. There is a really good mod.
Yeah, the TTS mod is unreal.
Yeah.
And nothing beats the feel of the
Of course.
Thing.
And that's, you know, any game. I haven't played any game online where I'm like, I would rather play than online. Like every game, you just want the pieces in your hand. You want to see the board in front of you. You want to take everything in one glance. But yeah, no, I'm the same as Mike. When you were talking about it, I was like, oh, I wonder if I can get it somewhere cheap. which is no, you can't get it anywhere cheap. it's like the price it were. But yeah, like right. There's not, I haven't talked to anyone who has said, I don't like Mage Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the main thing is because I don't think people who wouldn't enjoy that game would play it. And then those who at least kind of probably a bit like myself and Mike were like, oh, I'd like to give it a try. We kind of already know what we're getting ourselves into. So it's like, yeah, we're willing. We're willing to sit through and have the longish teach, which is actually something we might have talked about it before, but you talked about, oh, it's a bear to teach. I know when I'm sitting through a teach, I'm like, whatever, take as long as you want. But when I'm doing the teach, I'm like, this needs to go quick. I don't want to sit here. I don't want to teach the game for 45 minutes. I want to teach the game in 10 minutes and go. How do you guys get past that? Like that feeling, not of, like I said, I'll sit there with a cup of coffee, with a beer, with a drink, maybe a bowl of chips or something. And just, you explain the game, explain as much as you want. I'll just chill out, take it all in. But when the shoe's on the other foot, I hate it. How do you guys get past that?
I actually don't like teaching it. That's really hard. But you know what? You just got to know your audience. Even ask. Yeah. Like if people want to – like ask them, how do you learn? Like do you learn by doing? Mm-hmm. Do you want to just like when I taught Mage Knight with Harry, I said, look, I think that we should do it this way. I think I'll just teach you the game concepts and then we'll just start playing and we'll play an open round and you can like stop me. You can ask questions. You know, that's what I'm thinking. And he was like totally fine with that. And I think that everyone learns in a different way.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people you can visibly see that they're not comfortable or they're jittery or whatever if you're just teaching them for an hour and you're just, you know, rule-splaining to them. That doesn't work for some people. You can literally see that they're not comfortable with that. They're not going to take it all in, whereas some people want that. Some people want to know every single little rule and anything that comes up later, they're like, why didn't you tell me this?
I think that's kind of where I get a bit caught up because while I'm happy to sit through a rules teach, I know I'm not going to remember every single bit, and that's okay, but I'm also not the type of person who is going to exploit every single rule in my first play. I'm going to go in there, have a train of thought or a strategy and go down that strategy and sort of forfeit everything else. You know, maybe something will come. I'll be like, oh, I finished that a bit early. I'll go down and do that or whatever, but I'll have one sort of fairly simple plan and go for that way. So I'm happy to say, yep, look, if it comes up, you explain it to me. And if I wish I'd known that beforehand, so be it. But I probably wouldn't have been clever enough to make use of it in the first place. But I do know there's lots of people, and for very good reasons, want every little bit this explained because they don't want to get to the end and be like, well, if I'd known that, I would have done that from the beginning.
Yeah.
Because I think the reason why I don't subscribe to that is because when we played board games as a family, it was always like, well, that was this time. So next time you play it, you can do that. Whereas I think when you're playing a game once or you go to a board game day or things like that, you never know when you're going to play that game again.
Right.
You want it done. And I actually had this conversation with my brother. I was like, why are you so intent on doing everything like perfectly the first time? He's like, well, I never know when I'll play this game with you again. So I want to do everything I can in the first time. And I was like, dude, I will bring this game. If you enjoy it, I will bring it back every time for you. Like it's not as if, no, you beat me at this game. I'm not going to play it with you ever again. It's like, So anyway, that it was just when you talked about it being a bear to teach and a game you love, it was just more something I thought. What about you, Mike? I've been at game days with you and you're like holding court and teaching games and getting people engaged. Like as a professional teacher, I'm like, I wish my classes were like that. Like what do you
why don't they pay attention to me? Like everyone pays attention to me.
Because I'm not playing Mafia to Cuba every day. Maybe I should do that. No more quadratic algebra. We're just playing Mafia to Cuba for 50 minutes.
My big thing when I teach is constantly asking, does everyone get what I just said? You know what I mean? Like because I can go fast or I can go slow. Like both times I taught Clank, the first time was with somebody that's never played a deck builder before. So I had to go a lot slower and a lot more, you know, making sure I explained things a lot more thoroughly. The second time I played, just the other day, it was with people that are big gamers. So I'm like, cool, this is a deck builder. You know how deck builders work. In this deck builder, play all your cards. You don't get it. Like I could just be bang, 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 bang. Okay, does everybody get exactly what I just said right now? Any questions? No? Good, continue. Because I think the problem is you get a lot of people save all these questions and then they get lost in it towards the end of the pitch, right, you know? So like, I always like try to pause. Okay, what questions do you have right now? Let's keep going. But the thing is, some games are going to take a long time to teach, and there's no way around it. You know what I mean? And that's just comes down to you being comfortable teaching them. Like Clank, you can teach in 15 minutes if somebody's a gamer and they know what's going on. But Mage Knight, I think there's so much to give everyone an idea of what's going on. You can't necessarily do it quickly, you know? So as long as everyone's comfortable, the way Sarah's doing it is perfect. Is like, I'll teach you the main things of the game, and let's the rest as we go. No problem, you know? Yeah. As long as you're in the hands of a good teacher that can say, hey, and especially in a cooperative game, that makes it easier. If you're playing competitive, you've now got a big foot against Harry, and it's going to make the game a lot harder for him 100%. To feel competitive in it. Yeah. Whereas in a cooperative game, you're helping each other along anyway.
Yeah. I think I have this like thing because I've taught people who aren't gamers games, obviously I'm a little bit self-conscious about taking too long or like losing people's interest. Yeah. And I know I've spoken to Mo about this is like, no, but you need to like just not do that with gamers because gamers do want to know all the things. Generally. So that's an interesting space to be. So I think it's probably worth even just investigating. If you're playing with people you don't really know, just maybe investigating how they like to learn stuff. Do you want to do a practice round? Do you want to, you know, like that's an option. You can do a practice round if they like learn by doing, and because everyone does really like learn so differently. So anyway,
that's a really valid question. I have lots of examples.
Yeah.
I'll pull out certain cards. All right, I'm going to show you what a turn looks like. I have to really show physical examples because I'm not always the best at explaining without the visual representations, which is why it's great that I'm on a podcast because, you know, I get to see all my hand movements and things that I'm waving around. But, I need to have those physical things to show. That's how I learn best. I want people to show me what I need to do because that helps. How it helps me soak it in a lot better.
Same here. That's why I like usually before I read a rule book, like I really like to read the rule book thoroughly. But before I do that, I just want to watch a video, even if it's just a five, like just for part of the video, just so I can literally see a turn or something. And then I'm like, oh, okay, that's sort of the brief idea. And then I'll read the rules. Yeah.
I watch a video, read the book, and then watch a video again.
And the video
going on as you're playing. I kind of know what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Or have the game set up. Sometimes I just have the game set up as I'm reading it and then I can at least move stuff around and,
I like it.
Anyway.
I'll skip through to my main game I want to talk about that I've been having a lot of fun with lately. And it's a game that I had a lot of buzz about a little while ago and I finally got a copy. I actually bought it off Mr. Mitch himself. It's Bullet Heart. Have you guys heard of this?
Oh, yeah.
I am so keen to play this game.
Yeah, it's a real lot of fun. Real-time
fighting, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a game that typically you're going to be playing with a three-minute timer, and the timer is there just to make you really uncomfortable and have to make quick, rash decisions. The first few times I played, we just didn't use a timer. I'm like, let's just get our heads around it. Let's all figure this out. And it's still bloody hard, you know? And then the thing I like about the timer, though, is they've got a Spotify playlist for this game. So instead of having a timer,
that's cool.
You've got a playlist going with thematic music and you sort of hear it ramp up and start slowing down. Oh, wait, was that the timer? Oh, crap, I have to stop. Like it's a really interesting anime-themed push-your-luck puzzle game, which I think are a bunch of things that tick a lot of boxes for me. So basically, there's all these different game modes to play. There's competitive, cooperative. There's like four or five different kind of ways to play, and I've only played the one main competitive way. But basically, you've got these tokens numbered 1 to 4 of different colors, and you pop 10 in your bag to start. And basically, when the music starts or when you say go, everyone's going to start pulling these tokens out. You've got a character in front of you. And your character has asymmetric powers. So that's one thing I love about this game. Every time I play, I've chosen a different character.
Speaking my language here, Mike.
Asymmetric. The strategy is completely different every time you play, which is really cool. They have all their own stuff. And if I, how do I explain it? There's a board, a central board that everyone has the same one of, with the five, I think, different colors represented in straight lines going downwards. And they each have like six circles of that color going down. So if I pull out a red three, I go one, two, three down, and that's where the red three goes. And the way that the game is push your luck is that you keep pulling out these tokens. And if four of my six red slots are taken and I pull out a three, that red three doesn't fit in that slot anymore and has to go down to the very bottom of the page, which goes across and covers a heart of yours, which is health. So basically, you want to stop pulling these coins out the bag and placing them before you sort of bust, and busting means you lose health. And the way you do that is you sort of pause the game for yourself and you start playing these cards that you have. Now, these cards are going to say, they're called bullets. Have a bullet here, here, and here, and you can destroy these three bullets. So they sort of show you a pattern, and they specify what has to be where. So one bullet to the left, one bullet, you know, two spaces up, and one bullet four spaces right. And if you can manipulate the bullets to be in those positions, you can then kill off these particular bullets. Once again, works a lot better with visual representation. But each different character has their own cards with these certain patterns on them that work to their sort of different asymmetric powers. And you sort of have three cards at a time. And on the right side of the board, you have different special actions you can do. To use these actions, you have these sort of action points that you can spend, and each action costs a different amount of action points. So for two action points, I'm going to move this bullet one, two spaces to the left. And for this action point, I can move it one diagonal to the right, which gets it exactly where I need it to be to sort of get some bullets off of my board. And basically, you're working to get the bullets off your board and be able to empty your bag. And then all the bullets that you've taken off your board, you pass to the player on the left to put into their bag. So it's fun because if you have a really good round and clear a lot of bullets off your board, they're going into Connor's bag next, and he's going to have a harder time playing the game. And then every single round, you're getting a handful of bullets and putting them back into your bag, increasing that amount every single round. So the game just starts ramping up harder and harder and harder. You're getting more and more bullets in your bag. You're going to have to make quicker, rash decisions on how you're going to do these patterns and how you're going to sort of arrange everything. Some of these patterns, some of these bullets also have stars on them, and you've got special star actions on your board. So when I clear a star bullet, I can activate these star abilities that I have. That might be get me more action points, or, you know, one of the characters has a cool thing where every time you clear a star bullet, you can flip any bullet on your board upside down. And my character's power is every upside down bullet is a wild color. Cool. So if I need to have a red and a blue here, I can use upside down bullets instead. Things like that. Really, really fun game. It's been really interesting to play. It doesn't go for too long because you all die pretty quickly in the game. But I'm trying
sounds
to
sounds like Harry bit. Playing Mage Knight.
Is it Last exactly. Man Standing? Is it Last Man Standing or?
Yeah, Last Man Standing is generally okay. Play. Yes. Two people will die at the same time or get knocked out at the same time, then it's whoever's got the least amount of bullets left on their board. So it really encourages you to just try to clear as much as you can every round. But it's really cool because you have three cards out of your deck with different patterns, and every time you play one of those cards, it goes into a discard pile and you don't draw a new one. You have to spend two of those action points to draw a new card to add to your little tableau of what sort of different patterns you can use. And the patterns you can't adjust. You can't mirror them. You can't put them to the side. You have to use them as they are. But, man, it's just a lot of fun, especially when you are doing the timer because you're playing against the clock. And if the timer runs out and you haven't finished emptying your bag, you have to continue emptying your bag after the timer goes out, but you can't try to clear any bullets anymore. So it just speeds up the whole getting knocked out of the game. It's fun. It looks pretty. It's got lots of colors going on it. The artwork is all anime and really, really cool. And the music's really fun. I just find it's a really fun sort of amp up kind of game because it's not a game you sort of sit there and slowly play and chill out. It's quick paced and very, very exciting.
And if you combine it with Bullet Star, you can play up to 8 players.
Well, imagine a game of 8 players. It would be chaos.
Insane.
Be nuts.
I'm interested to get it just for the new characters because there's so many characters to play.
That's like an expand alone, is it?
Expandalone.
Yeah.
I don't know I've never heard that thing.
That's a word.
An expandalone.
Yeah, like you can either buy it as a standalone game or as an expansion. I will coin that term, but I definitely did not coin that term. That's been.
I like it.
Well, it sounds good. Expandalone.
This is a game I think my middle brother, not my youngest brother, would love because he likes puzzle games. He does like competitive games, but that whole thing, I don't know that about the timer though. I think the timer would stress him out a bit. He doesn't like making quick decisions. So
real time stresses a lot of gamers out.
I remember playing the pandemic. What was the one where they had to do it quick? The rapid response. And it was so simple. And we're just like, we're just throwing the dice everywhere. We couldn't do it. We just like lost the plot. This game, I heard about it. I actually heard about it on Board Game Barrage. One of the lads on that was talking about it. And I was like, oh, yeah, this sounds so cool. So I can't believe Mitch was sitting on this game for so long. He didn't tell me about it.
Yeah, Kenny, he put up for sale.
Wrote a review on Tabletop Source for this game ages ago. He did an interview with someone from Level 99 Games, I think is the publisher.
Really?
Yeah, which was really interesting.
How long ago are we talking about?
Like ages. Like
Mitch wrote a review. I'm surprised.
No, not Mitch. Kenny. Kenny.
Oh, Kenny. I've been saying Mitch.
No, sorry.
Okay, Kenny wrote that makes sense.
Yeah. But I'd be interested to know what the solo. I mean, I assume Mitch bought it because solo.
Well, solo I can't see. Like, I know there is a solo mode to it, and I just don't know because usually when you take the boards off your board, they go to the next player. So that mechanic will have to change somehow.
Yeah, but, it says play solo with score attack.
And then there you go. But
but the community thinks it's best with 1-2, so it must be solo.
I've been playing with 4 players regularly, and it's been a blast every time. Yeah. And everyone usually wants to go straight away because it takes a minute to get used to what you're trying to achieve, and then just want to go again and again. But no, it's been a lot of fun.
It looks super fun. It looks like it's got like a little bit of Candy Crush going.
Yeah,
it does. Yeah,
with all this crazy
it's like
fighting.
Battle Candy Crush.
Oh. Yeah,
yeah.
Those 3 in a row games, man. Whatever they are, I can't get enough of them. Like. Where it's like,
started with Dr. Mario for me.
Wario Woods. Do you play Wario Woods?
I haven't played Wario Woods.
Is the best one. I'm waiting for it to come on the Super Nintendo expansion pack for the Switch. I will lose my life because I'll just play that game.
I could see playing that. Oh, dear.
And Connor, there's a game that you've got for your sizzle that I've seen a lot of buzz about, and the name makes me think of something probably that it completely is
not.
So
what do you think? Like, what do you think it is? Tell me what you think it is.
I know what it is. The game. I play an Iron Man. You play a Hulk. Mike plays a Hulk, and then we all go snap.
And whoever has the biggest stack of cards at the end wins. No, so this makes sense. This is Marvel Snap, which. Won Mobile Game of the Year last year at the Video Game Awards. But you're probably going, what are you talking about a mobile game for, Connor? You absolute clown. And yes, I am a clown and all sorts of other things. But it's a mobile game that's based around a card game. Now, this card game doesn't exist, you know, in its physical form. There's a reason for that that I'll touch on later. But it is perhaps one of the best competitive card games I've played in a really, really long time. And one of the reasons that you would like it, Mike, is because it feels like Smash Up. So in this game, what you do is you have a deck of 10 cards, and they're all Marvel characters. So it's things like Iron Man, Hulk, Captain America, but even really obscure ones that like I hadn't really heard of, and I've read plenty of Marvel comics, played lots of Marvel games, and I was like, oh, what? That is a deep cut of a Marvel character. And each of the characters has a energy cost. So as each turn goes by, you get more and more energy. So on your first turn, you have 1 energy. On your second turn, you've got 2, so on and so forth, until the 6th and final turn where you have 6 energy. Now, this kind of sounds like people might say, well, that kind of sounds like Hearthstone. Well, they'd probably be correct, right? So they would say, yep, that's correct. You are getting more and more energy as you go along. However, the main difference is that what you're doing is you're playing cards not to attack your opponent per se, but to have certain amounts of power on 1 of 3 locations. So just like Smash Up, the person that has the most power on a location by the end of the game will win. And you've got 3 locations and you need to win two out of those three locations, or if you tie, you need to have more power overall, effectively. So as the turn goes on, as the game goes on, you'll have more and more power to play more and more advanced cards. Now, the reason why this works so well as a video game is because there's things that this game will do that would be super cumbersome for you to do if you were playing it physically. So there might be things like if you play Killmonger, he will destroy all one-cost cards. Now, that's fairly easy, right? You just take them out. But you just play Killmonger, takes out all the one-cost cards, they're gone. Then there's cards like Carnage. Carnage will effectively eat all the other cards at his location and then be worth two power for each of those cards that he eats. So there's a few different types of powers or effects that cards will have. So they're either ongoing, so it lasts, you know, for the entire game, or on reveal. So when you play a card and you reveal it, it will reveal. So I reckon one of the coolest cards in the game is Doctor Doom. And when you play Dr. Doom on reveal, what will happen is he'll spawn two Doom bots at the opposite location that are both worth five. So you're really trying to get the most out of your cards as you can. You're only going to have six power at the end and you don't get to carry over your power. So it's not like you can say, well, I'm not going to spend a card this turn. I'm going to wait and I'll have three energy next turn. No, if you don't use your one energy, it's gone. You get two energy the next turn. But then there's a whole bunch of different cards that will maybe give you one more energy the next turn. Or there's Magic, who is a mutant, and she creates a seventh turn, so you end up with seven energy the next turn. Oh. But you only have 10 cards, and you can't have multiples. So you can only have one, which, you know, it makes sense thematically, right? Like there's only one Iron Man in the Marvel world and all that stuff, and you play against each other. But what really ties it together is when you play against someone, so you play against people online, when you play against them, you decide whether or not you're going to snap. And when you snap, you win the currency of cubes. You double it. So if you get to the end of the game and you haven't, neither you or your opponents have snapped, whoever wins will win two cubes and you will lose two cubes. You slowly rank up. So it is an online competitive game. However, I'm not massive on competitive online games, but I found this super, super approachable. The games are lightning quick. They're so, so quick. Unbelievable. I've played a game in like under 2 minutes and you just go again, because sometimes you'll retreat because you're like, no, I can't win this, I'm out, and you get to save your cubes. Sometimes you'll play until the end and you'll double down. So imagine like a game of poker, yeah? So you've got your hand and you're like, I'm all in because I think I'm going to win, but you don't know until the end because it's like, oh, my God, I think I've got the play, but who knows what my opponent's got? And there's all these metas developing and it's like, well, that's that type of deck and this is that type of deck. The synergies between the cards are fantastic. And it's got this really cool system of earning cards. So a lot of the issue with these online card games, and I don't know if you've played them, Sarah or Mike, but things like Magic Online or Hearthstone or I'm trying to think what else other games, like card games you play online, is that if someone just has a massive wad of cash, they'll just go and buy all these cards. You actually can't do that, because the only way you can unlock more cards is by leveling up. Mm-hmm. You can buy variants of cards that you have, but that's just cosmetics. So the only thing you can do by paying money is just getting cosmetics, and that's what I really like about it. The only way you can get more cards, and not even more powerful cards, they're just different ways to play the game. So it's not like I've got to get to collection level 300 and I'm going to have the best card in the game and no one can beat me. That's not the case, because every card has a counter. Like I've built decks where I'm like, this is unstoppable, and I'll win five games in a row and then I'll lose 10 because it's just like because it's only 10 cards, there's no way for you to, and you never know if you're going to draw every card either. Like there's no way to like mill and get cards in your hand like this with other card games. It's like, yeah, I might be able to draw an extra card or whatever, but it is so clever. I was very skeptical to start with. I was like, oh my God, another crappy game that's using the Marvel license. But this is so good. Like this is one of the best, not just online card games, one of the best card games I have played in a really, really long time.
Interesting. And the reason that you think it can't be a physical game is because of the whole leveling up.
And leveling up, and there's stuff that happens randomly that would just be really cumbersome, like, you know, randomly picking something to be destroyed. Like, you can't really do that randomly, can you? Like, you can't, yeah, you know, no. What do you do? This is, I mean, you could get two dice.
Roll a die.
We go, this is numbers one through that and roll them or whatever.
And
but
that's that.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
It's, but yeah, like.
I mean, you could make a version of it in the physical world. For which sure. Slightly different. For sure. You know.
But, you know, how am I supposed to get my 3D cards, Sarah, when I upgrade them to collection level ultra? How am I supposed to get my 3D?
Collection level ultra.
But, yeah, like, you do not have to spend a cent on this game, and you can have.
That's cool.
An absolute blind over time. I highly suggest it is a great, like, I'm just sitting on the couch watching some TV or my partner's watching some TV. I'll just put on Marvel Snap. And the next thing you know, it's the next morning and you haven't been to bed. That's that topic of game it is. But, yeah, like a little bit of something different. You know, it's a card game, but it's not one you play, like, in person. I love card games. I love seeing what things can do. Like, that's one of the reasons I love Arkham so much and Marvel Champions, because I love to see card games that can do different things. And this is just something really, really cool. So, yeah, my sizzle for this week was Marvel Snap. It is not Snap with Marvel cards, although I would play that.
Yeah,
Wolverine. Yeah, woo, I win. Yeah, I win.
I'd play it with Ren. Yeah. She's even more advanced than that, though.
I still haven't played Marvel Splendor yet. I need to play Marvel Splendor, where you collect the Infinity Stones.
Yeah, well, that's fun, Ren actually played Fantasy Realms with Zoltan. Oh, really? The other day. Yes, she did. She didn't do too badly. I don't have the score here, but yeah, she liked it. But I mean, she's picking cards based on the fact that she likes the look of the cards.
Yeah.
She's not reading them. But she's like, oh, a unicorn. Yep.
Yeah,
I'll keep that one. Thank you very much.
Zoltan's probably there, like, trying to combo everything. Oh, I need this card to do that and this card to do that. And written yeah. Well. It's funny you talk about that because my niece, Elsie, she's much older than Ren, but she kind of comes in and out, plays board games or whatever. But we started playing Ripple Rush. I don't know if you guys have played Ripple Rush. It's a roll and write. And she smokes us at that because, because the whole thing is you can only put effectively it's four rows of different colors and different shapes. And you're never going to fill the row because it's numbers 1 through 25 of each color, but you've only got like 8 spots. So you need to sort of sacrifice and be like, okay, where am I going to put that? And we put all this thought into where we're going to put them strategically. And she's like, well, 20 is higher than 10. So I'm going to put 20 above 10. We're like, no, you fool. What are you doing? And then like the numbers that are in between 20 and 10 never come up. So she ends up winning. And we're like, oh, what are we doing in their lives? So yeah, it was just when you mentioned Fantasy Realms, I thought of Ripple Rush. So yeah.
That's awesome. Well, those are some really awesome games that I spoke about, and I could sit here all night talking about all the other games that I played, but I think we need to move on to our next areas. Now, before we do, a couple of things to mention. We just wanted to do a bit of a shout-out to some of our Patreon members out there, and thank you for your support to the podcast. We've got a few names here. We've got the Jolly Swagman Games, which is Kenny, who's got Scrap out on GameFound at the moment as well. So good luck to him, and if you haven't checked Scrap out on GameFound, make sure you do that. We've got Kim Brandes, I want to say, Elsie Barnett, Julian Ridden, and Frank Versace. So thank you guys for helping us out and supporting the podcast.
Thank you so much.
We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much. And some of these people may even be at our game days that are coming up. We've got 2 game days coming up in February. We've got Melbourne on the 4th of February in Preston. And we've got Brisbane on the 18th of February in Corinda, I want to say. I think that's how you pronounce it. So, and we've got the Sydney one coming up in April, isn't it, Sarah?
Yes.
Yes, she says
April
with confidence.
The 8th? I'm pretty sure it's April the 8th. Sorry, you put me on the spot there. Around I'm pretty there. Sure but it's April the 8th. For some reason, it's the only one that's not in the run sheet. April 8th. I'm sure.
That's far away. I'm like, but we'll give it, we'll send it a bone and mention it as well. But sure. If you haven't got your tickets yet, folks, get tickets to your local game days as they are selling out fast. And we hope to see you all there.
Hey guys, Adrian here, and I'd like to talk to you guys about Advent Games, who directly support this podcast and our Sydney Game Days.
Hey, Adrian, are you talking about Advent Games?
I am.
How awesome are they?
They're great, mate.
Hey, wait.
I love the website.
Hey, Dan, are you talking about Advent Games?
We are talking about Advent Games.
I love how they have $10 shipping inside of Sydney and $15 flat rate shipping outside of Sydney, outside of the metro area.
Yeah, makes it so much easier when you're checking out the website, all the different categories. Ah, the best. New releases, upcoming.
And Dean also has an incredible newsletter he sends out at the end of every week. So please make sure that you get on his mailing list.
Yeah. Sorry, Adrian, what do you mean? Interrupt as you were?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I also love Advent Games. And I have bought games for them at the Sydney Game Day myself and even flown them back in my luggage from Sydney to Brisbane. Dean's an awesome dude who is very community focused, and you'll even see him at game nights throughout Sydney area.
Mm-hmm. And he was one of the very first sponsors of the Board Game Barbecue podcast. So thanks very much for being a long standing and loyal sponsor of the show. We love you.
Thanks, Dean.
Thanks, Advent.
Moving on from there, we are going to talk about the question of the pod from last week, which was, what game makes you scream the most? How did you guys go with that? Did you guys have any answers from the last one?
I said that it was the players,
the players
that make me scream.
I think, what did I say? I did say something last week. I can't remember. But it's more, for me, it's those things in co-op or solo games where, yeah, like I think you draw the Autofail token in Arkham, or you know the Shadows of the Past in Marvel Champions, that totally ruins one of your plans. The other thing was, you know, when someone takes your space, and my thing is, yes, that if it's like, ooh, and it's just come up that turn, you go, oh, that's just rubber the green, right? Like, okay, it hasn't turned up. Where I get annoyed is when there's clearly a spot I should have gone to the turn before, and I could have gone there, and I'm such a moron that I don't go there, and then it gets around to me, and by the time it gets back around to me, it's already gone. That's what cooks me, because it's my own incompetence. Like, you know.
Right. You had that thing. It was like you were going to go there, but then you were like, no, I'll get this other thing and then I'll go there. But then by then everyone
wants
that.
That's the worst. Because I don't mind, like, that's part of games, right? When someone sees an opportunity and goes there,
right,
that's exactly what I was going to do. Yeah. But when I should have gone there the turn before, that makes me.
And then you're angry at yourself.
And then it takes over the rest of my night. But
I tell you what makes me scream. You know, I just realized what actually makes me scream is Aeon's End, when you get – like the nemesis, and then you get the nemesis.
Oh,
again.
Yeah.
And then if you shuffle and you get it again, three in a row, God. And you can get four in a row. Four in a row is just like, let's quit. But yeah.
I think I just scream in every game that I play. I'm just loud. And like, if I'm playing with my good friends that we like to trash talk each other, I'll just turn it into the most vile, just screaming match ever. I was playing games. I ran a game day on Australia Day recently, and Lisa from my community was there. She goes, "Michael, you're in a grumpy mood today." I'm like, "No, I'm having a great time. I'm just trash talking my mate. That's how you know I'm having a good time. That's just what I do." But yeah, I'd scream all the time.
And Frosthaven the other day, I got a miss, and then you have to shuffle your deck if you get a miss, because you have to shuffle the miss back in. And then sure enough, I shuffled it and it was at the top and I missed again. I couldn't hit anything.
It's funny you say that, because from Discord we had Andy and he said, definitely Gloomhaven. I feel like one of the best things about the design of Gloomhaven is the whole system that puts an immense amount of pressure on a couple of intense moments. Drawing a two times or a miss at exactly the right or wrong moment is always a scream. So that was kind of like what I was saying about King of Death Monster, where you roll the crit, it's like, everyone gets around it. But then the miss, it's funny, like, because those things you go, oh, what are you doing? Like, why did you draw the miss? Like, if we were playing Frosthaven, I'd 100% put that miss on you. It's like, it was your fault. If anyone else
did that,
it would have been someone else. We had Daniel say, catastrophic failure when trading or deploying in John Company 2nd Edition, reliably generates shouts and groans. Hells says the weather dice in Robinson Crusoe, or pretty much anything in this war of mine. That game is brutal as all get up. And then Bubba said, when I'm ahead in Space Base and then the table starts rolling 12s for the person who stacked it all game. When I stack the 12 sector and win, it's all skill though. So it's like, yep. Everyone else, it's luck, but when I do it, hey, it's mad skill.
Strategy. Strats. That's what it was. Yeah. All right, our Facebook people. So Gene said that Salem 1692 is always full of screaming witch accusations and bellowing laughter. Tom Moore said, that's a really good game. Yeah. I haven't played that in a long time. Tom Moore said, Power Grid or Pipeline if I don't have a calculator. Yes, maths makes me scream as well. David Joseph said, I once played a 4.5-hour game of Wingspan. What?
Isn't that the normal run,
against a guy against a guy that was obsessing over making perfect decisions. And I nearly died. I don't know why I was so polite to even bother finishing the game. Oh, that's a real test of patience, that one. Jamie Lawrence wrote Too Many Cooks. Oh, and Too Many Cooks. Kim, you are ruining the soup. David Bryson said, any game that is tight and where somebody does something or takes something that you know, really wanted to do. So kind of like what you were saying. Yeah.
Infuriating.
Like so it. Many moments. Lots of screaming moments.
Well, thank you to everyone for joining in the conversation. And the next conversation, Connor, this was your idea for a question. Do you want to take it away?
I did. I thought we've talked about things that make you scream. Now, what about something that would give you immense amount of joy? And what would be your dream / fantasy game? What game would you like to see that would be like your perfect? It's like it's made for you. What would that be? I feel like that was a topic when we used to do topics on our podcast. So
we once talked about like IPs.
Yes.
And like what game should, you know, what IP should they make a game out of? But we haven't exactly done dream game. You can even do dream team. Yes. Like you can incorporate who you would want to make your dream game.
Yeah,
as well.
We did say a caveat though that you cannot all pick Ian O'Toole. He's already busy enough as it is.
Yeah, he's got a lot lined up. So
I'm looking out for you, Ian. Don't forget when I come to you with my game idea. My dream game. We talked about this off air. Is I have a love for Arkham. I have a love for Star Wars. I want to see those two merged together. And like what you said, Sarah, before, why haven't they done it yet? Like seriously, like. Why would they not do it?
Frankly, it's odd.
Like you could either
they have the IPs for both.
You could have like the the smuggler class, the soldier class, the Jedi, like, and you build your character up and level it up. I'd even like take something almost like Marvel Champions, but I do love the more in depth deck building of Arkham for me. So that would be my dream game. What about you, Mike? What would be your dream / fantasy game?
I always struggle with these questions because my brain just goes to a million places. But I think I want to see, like, for me, I think it's a lot of IPs. I want to see themes with a lot of themes. I've wanted, and this is why I was a bit disappointed with Dog Park, because I think it was going to be more Euro-y. But I want a really cool, heavy Euro based on dogs. And I don't know how, but something I've always wanted a really good dog game that's really, really heavy. And I haven't found one like that for me yet. And for some reason, I've also wanted to see a game similar to Zombicide, but with the theme of Dragon Ball Z.
That would be so cool.
I think Dragon Ball Z hasn't been done enough. Well, I haven't really played any Dragon Ball Z games. I know there's a trading card game that's very popular that I haven't tried yet. But I don't know. I'm just thinking a Dragon Ball Z game with minis where you're leveling up your hero, like you want to be left alone for a while so you can sort of charge up. And I want to see
for two or three episodes, you charge up for two or three episodes.
Yeah, exactly. I want to be a board game where there's a Goku and a Vegeta that do a Kamehameha at each other and you're both rolling dice vigorously trying to see who pushes who's the other way. I don't know. I just think that'll be really, really fun. I think that'd be really cool. How about you, Sarah? You got any ideas there?
I don't even know yet, but I know that like I kind of like crave something like really crazy and different, and I'm sure that there could be something like in the horror genre that people could do with a board game that could be really cool and just sort of thinking outside the box. I got this like RPG once called 10 Candles, which was really cool. And I never got the chance to actually play it with other people, but it was really innovative. And it was like, you actually turn all the lights out. You got these little 10 tea candles, right? And everyone is going to die in the game. You know, you're going to die, right? And it's like this RPG based on that. It was like kind of pushing the boundaries. It was like weird. Like there's no, you all want to be heroes, but you can't be. You're all going to die kind of thing. I'd love to like play something that's just like, I don't know, pushes the boundary like that. But I don't even know. If I had an idea for what a dream game would be, I'd just go and design it. I'd just try and design it.
I don't have the patience.
I don't know. There's so many different things. But I just, that's, I don't know. My dream game is just, it's just the next like different thing that someone's going to do that pushes the envelope. I'm there for that.
Fair call.
I'll try anything.
And we want to hear more answers from the community as well. So jump on Facebook, jump on Discord. We want to hear from you guys. What's your dream game? Let us know in the comments and we'll read some of them out on the next episode as well.
And we'll steal your design ideas. No, we won't.
Yeah, Sarah will go and make them. I will.
No, that's it. Any budding board game designers that are having a brain blank, quickly come to our Discord and Facebook page and you'll find some ideas.
No, but like the whole thing with like Kingdom Death as well, like I really like that sort of dark, you know, like there's a lot of like horror stuff I think you could do. And it's hard to make a board game scary, but I reckon you could.
I think that's the suspense, isn't it?
It's like,
right.
Oh my God, what's something coming? Like and having having randomness or things you know, uncertainty and things like that, because you can't really like you can't make it scary. Like you're gonna play music. Like what was that old game that you put the DVD
Nightmare.
And you're walking up to the TV. And the bugs crawl across his face and it's like, come on, it's not that scary, it's just a bug.
But that was horrific when I was a kid. We had a big projector and, you know, having that guy blasted up in a room with a sound system around, just getting the crap out of you as a kid.
Did very well.
Yeah.
But we're looking forward to seeing what everyone else writes on our community there about that one. What's your dream game? Before we hit our O's and wrap up the show, just want to say to the community again, thank you for your support. And if you do want to support our podcast, there are a few ways you can do it. You can jump on our Patreon page, patreon.com/boardgamebarbecue, and you can sign up there to hear some exclusive content. You can get some access to some exclusive channels in our Discord. But, you know, paying money isn't the only way to support us. You can also, you know, make sure you're joining our communities on Discord and Facebook, joining in the conversations, coming to our game days. You can follow us on Eventbrite as well. We're on Instagram. All that also helps support. Also, by leaving a star rating on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, it goes a long way as well. So thank you for all who've done that, and we look forward to seeing some more of you do that as well in the future. From there, we'll move on to our oaths. Sarah, how have you gone on your oath?
Success!
Hey!
Yay! I actually got Mo to play Carnegie. He really liked it. He really liked it too. So he wants to play it again.
That's a double success.
That is a double success. Yes. We actually played on TTS because he's not huge on BGA, even though the BGA implementation is really good. But he prefers to like move the pieces around. So I taught it on TTS. I think I did a pretty good job of teaching. I'm not the best teacher, but I did okay. It went well.
It's harder online.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, but it went really well. And it's a great game. It was an interesting one because you know how you randomly set up the different departments that you can buy from? They were mostly all in HR and it was just moving folks around. So there wasn't a lot of variety there, which was – it sort of narrowed the scope of what we could do, which was kind of interesting. It's good.
And what's next?
Oh, yes. I have something. I'm going to paint my Frosthaven minis.
Very nice.
Yeah. So that – because we've been using the standees because Kerry's like, nah, I don't want to play with gray minis that aren't painted. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'll just have to paint them then. So – That is my next.
Is that what I saw behind you? Or was it either like a really bad pizza that's been overly burnt, or was it a pizza box getting
yeah,
sprayed?
It's a pizza box. Yeah, the pizza box with the spray thing in it. That's a great use of an old pizza box.
Just don't do them on your new chairs like my brother did once.
Oh,
no.
No. Don't do that.
And Conduct, how did you go?
Well, I'm going to call for mercy rule because it was last week. Not that a week isn't a long enough time, but I said I'll play Oak. I haven't played it yet. I will play it. But I'm actually going to take a break from the podcast from a while because I'm off traveling with my partner. So, I won't be on for a little bit. I'm going to be at the Melbourne Game Day, so I'll get to say hello to a few folks. But I will be back, I promise. I'm not just going to bugger off for good. But, yeah, I'll be gone for about probably, I'd say, probably a month and a half worth of podcast stuff. So, you know, that's probably, you know, 3 or 4 episodes, I guess. But, I've been a bit slack with my own painting, actually. I'm pretty sure Sarah stole my oath idea when she saw it on the spreadsheet.
I swear to God, I didn't read it.
But, I mean, you've done more painting with the spray painting lately than I have, so I'll cut you some slack. But I would like to get back to painting my Warhammer minis. I saw that Jules is running paint club as well, so I might jump in and do some stuff then. But when I come back from my trip, I'll have a little bit of spare time before I go back to work. So I think I'd like to spend part of that, you know, really getting on top of my painting and doing that again. And it's just something I really enjoyed. So, and then I'll hopefully have more to show come the middle of the year.
Very nice. Very nice. My oath last time I was on the podcast was to play the game Northgard, which is an implementation from a video game. And insert excuse here. I haven't done it. I don't have a good excuse. I really don't. I've had lots of time.
The dog ate my Northgard.
Mate, I don't know. I started learning it. And it's not that I think it looks bad, but for some reason I just like, nope, there's other stuff I want to play instead now. And I'm like, can I just go back in time and change what my oath was? Because I want to play this game and this game. I'm sure it's going to be great once I get to get it to the table, but I just need to do it. And I just keep putting it off for some reason. And what better way to encourage me than to put a second oath on top of that now? So,
because we all know the only thing that
this
helps
is the first time.
Pressure.
Sorry.
Exactly. Bit of pressure.
Yeah, for sure. You know, this is the first time that I'm the one that's completed my oath and others haven't. It's never happened before.
Or congratulations. I'm usually pretty good at them. I usually get them done. I usually make it a priority, but I've just sort of kept putting it on the back burner. And then I'm like, oh, I'm recording tomorrow. Cool. I just had my oath. Oops. But like we do, we double down. And being with you today on the podcast, Sarah, made me pick my next oath because you love Aeon's End. And the only Aeon's End I've played is the first Legacy one. I've never actually played a base game Aeon's End. And with the last Kickstarter, I got the new Legacy and I got Outcasts and the New Age. And I thought you can pick which one of those I can pledge to play. Have you played those ones?
Oh, man. Yes, I have. They're so good. Oh, Outcasts is awesome. I mean, do you want to just do something that's awesome or do you want to kind of go in an order? Because you should probably play the New Age first.
Oh, really? It matters a little bit?
Yeah, kind of, for the story, but the story's not that big a deal.
Because I thought like one-shot sort of games. I don't know if there was much of a story to worry about because it's not a legacy
They both
anymore.
Have – well, no, they're not legacy, but they are expeditions, so they are set up to play in a mini campaign.
Oh.
They do have a little story. So you should probably start with the New Age, and the bosses in the New Age are really awesome. And then when you play Outcasts, there's quite a few surprises in there.
All right, cool.
And some more gameplay. Like there's some gameplay changes in Outcast, which is really cool.
All right.
So Outcast is probably my favorite out of all of it.
That's the best one?
Out of all of Aeon's End. Yeah.
So I've got to work my way up to it.
Yeah, so work your way up to it. Yeah, for sure. Right. New Age is awesome.
So yeah. I'm Michael Fruger. Swear to play Aeon's End, The New Age, and Northgard by the time I'm on the podcast next, which I think is like a week or so. So
we got the game day. Surely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. So maybe 2 weeks.
Why don't we play one of them together next week if we have time?
the time's going to be the hard factor. I'm happy to bring something for sure, but I think the time factor might be a difficult one there, because I've already booked myself for like four teachers throughout the day.
Nah, they don't care. So, I'm more important than the teachers.
You are more important. You are more important, kind of. Well, let me see what I can do. You tell me which one of them you want to play, and I'll see if I can learn and bring it to the game day as a backup and try to get that going. Dunzo. But on that note, folks, that brings us to the end of the podcast. Thank you both for joining me tonight.
No, thank you for hosting, Mike.
Thank you. Yeah, that wraps us for the week. So thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Thank you.
Bye.
I am Mike, and I'm freaking shit. Oh my god, my brain's not working.
Cool beans.